Welcome to another episode of The Gateway. My name is Russ, and as always, I am joined by my co-hosts Amin and Biagio. For this episode, The Gateway is excited to welcome Dr. Doa Kertulga, a theoretical physicist at Fermilab. His current research interests are quantum technologies, quantum simulation, quantum algorithms, and machine learning. Throughout his career, Doa has published in many sub-disciplines of quantum physics. After completing his PhD program at the School of Physics at Georgia Institute of Technology, he worked as an assistant professor at Georgia Southern University. Then he worked as a postdoctoral researcher at Los Alamos National Laboratory, and finally, postdoctoral researcher at Fermilab, where he was promoted to staff scientist.
Doa, welcome to The Gateway. We are so excited to talk with you today. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
So, I always like to start these conversations off at the beginning. I think that's a proper place to begin. So, how did you get to where you are and all of the accolades that you have and all of the incredible work that you're doing? How did you become who you are?
Thank you. So I first started my physics and mathematics education, actually back in Turkey, Istanbul. And then I moved to the United States and I completed a PhD in physics at Georgia Institute of Technology. And then during which I also wanted to improve my computer science skills. And then I also did a minor in computer science because currently the physics, I am good at pen and paper calculations, but in order to be successful in physics and then do really hard calculations, you also have to do some computation. And then for that, you need computer. And then after that, I was an assistant professor at Georgia Southern University. And then I worked as research associate at Los Alamos National Laboratory for 2 years. And then I moved to Fermilab as research associate for 3 years. And then I was promoted to staff scientist at Fermilab. Currently, I am a theoretical physicist. I help with the theory and algorithm problems that might come up during the development of the quantum computer.
Wow. Okay. And for our listeners, just so I make sure I'm representing yourself well, can you say your actual full name? Just to make sure, because I think I do good, but sometimes I mess up on that.
So my name is Doa. It is Noah with D. And my last name is Kürkçüoğlu.
Absolutely beautiful. That's perfect. I would have never I know we've prepped that one, so I'm so glad I have that on the record for everyone there. So Doa, thank you again. I want to begin this conversation then with some definitions, because I think a lot of times right now we, as media and as just society, we toss around terms because it sounds cool and we actually have no real understanding of what it is. I'm purely talking about myself when I'm trying to impress people. So when we talk about quantum computing, what is, from a very basic understanding, what is quantum computing, or how is it different than what we're doing, so we kind of have a working understanding as we move forward in this conversation?
So I'm going to start from the computers we have right now, so that I'm going to tell the difference from the computers we have to the quantum computer.
Perfect.
So we actually call every kind of computer we have right now as classical computer. Because laptops, PCs, even supercomputers, even the smartphones, all work with the same principle. They are deterministic information. And then they basically only apply some gates, operations to simple electrical potential, where for one wire, if there's an electrical potential, it means one, which means logically it is true. If there's no potential on the wire, that means it is zero, which means false in the logical. So you basically like have these ones and zeros, and then apply and or like or classical gates, and then after that you watch YouTube. Like quite a jump, but like that's basically what it is.
Yeah.
So like the main thing is about like if there's a electrical potential, you cannot create also a no electrical potential at the same wire, right?
Correct.
And then like currently that means like currently what the commercial laptops, commercial PCs sell their like products with saying that like either they have 32-bit CPU, central processing unit, or 64-bit CPU. That means like this means this 64-bit CPU can process 64 of array of zeros and ones at one time. And then this one time is quite fast, like a fraction of a nanosecond. And then like computer scale can be quite fast, okay? Now, however, in order to like some of the problems in physics that we are trying to solve, for instance, like let's say we want to simulate a particle accelerator collider. Instead of like doing that experiment, we want to basically like have this model on a computer, or let's say in condensed matter, we want to find out how high temperature critical superconductors work. Like this is actually quite an unknown problem right now. We want to simulate them on a computer. However, these computers, classical computers, have a speed limit. Like they cannot go faster than like in order to solve these like high TC superconductor or quantum chromodynamics particle accelerator problems, you have to have very powerful computer. In order to have a very powerful computer, you have to have like you have to have a lot of wires inside the CPU. You have to have exponential amount of resources for the computer. Like there is actually one thing that even if you are going to use all the particles, all the atoms in the universe, observable universe, and then let's say you will be able to convert them into a giant universe-sized computer, you still cannot solve some of the problems that we are working on right now.
Now, within the framework of classical computing,
within the framework of classical computer, if this like whole universe classical computer like exists, there are still like some of the problems that you cannot actually work. Quantum computer first differs from this classical computing by you can create one and zero at the same time. This is actually because like, this is like, first I'm going to say that like, there are some rules in quantum physics that are quite counterintuitive to our everyday experience. For instance, one of the things is creating a superposition of two information. Like I can have in classical information, I can have one and zero. I cannot create both, right? So right. One is true information, like bird is a flying animal. Zero is wrong information, false information. Let's say bird is a swimming animal, like there are swimming birds, but let's say this is false. You cannot have like, so you cannot create the same information at the same time. With quantum computers, you can. You can actually for one quantum bit, which we call qubit, you can create one and zero as a superposition. So you can create one information as 70%, let's say, true, 30% false at the same time. Okay. So that's one thing that differs quantum computers from classical computers. So this thing, this like this principle, you can create superposition, actually helps you a lot of achieve computational power. For instance, I told you that a 64-bit CPU, central processing unit, can process 64 arrays of zeros and ones, right?
Yes.
At the same time.
Mm-hmm.
if this classic computer was a 64 quantum bit processing unit, it could do 2 to the 64 information at the same time.
Oh, because it so you are two truth values.
Yes, because all
can
of all the
more?
Say it again.
Can it hold more than two?
Yes, I will go into that. Actually, that's what we are doing at Fermilab right now. So which we call like for this kind of like if the information is going to carry more than two, like zero, one, and then if I'm going to have two, three, four, that's actually what we are doing at Fermilab right now. And then we call them qubits, like not qubits. And then that's actually one of the problems that I am actively working on as research, because this is kind of new thing right now. So first, like for over the years, people wanted to work on like only qubit-based quantum computers, because first, like we want to find out how quantum computing works actually. And then we want to find like, since this is a new thing, we want to know how is that going to develop? What are the difficulties that we are going to achieve? Like, and then like, as we like understand some of the things for qubit-based quantum computing, now it is advancing into some other thing. So that's one of the advancements is qubits, qubit-based quantum computer. So this like superposition principle can allow you to do 2 to 64 calculations at the same time. There's another thing for quantum computers can help you, which is called parallelism. So let's say I want to find out like one information, one 64 bit information, and I have another 64 information, second 60 bit information, and then I want to process both of them at the same time, okay? So if I want to do that on a classic computer, I basically need another CPU. And that's the reason that we have like multi-core laptops right now. So for instance, like my laptop here right now has 16 CPUs right now. So that means like in parallel, it can do 16 processes of the 64 bit. Now for quantum computer, if you want to do parallel computations, like for, let's say for 64, you just need one more qubit. And then these all like 2 to the 64 possibilities, like for all of the information, actually can be carried out at the simultaneously.
So just
so
to
you
clarify,
don't need, yeah.
To add qubits, you don't need to add CPUs.
No.
Oh, that's
yeah.
A whole
in order to increase the computational power of a quantum processing unit, you just need to add one more qubit.
Does it need more energy to work when you
actually
add qubits?
Eventually, yes. Compared to other qubits, yes, you will need more energy. However,
your energy increases because you are doing more work.
That's correct. Eventually,
okay. But it's just one CPU. That is
this is still in the same like we do not call them CPU, we call them QPU, quantum processing unit.
And I'm sorry to interrupt you, this is just very interesting. So like when we have these in the marketplace, right, like when quantum processing units are so everywhere, so there you could potentially buy a one qubit QPU, and then at some point you'll be like, hey, I want to make it better, and so now I have a two qubit right, like instead of 64 or 30, like you're just doubling them. The numbers are so much smaller because of the power they can do with the multiple positions. Am I getting that right, or am I so dumb?
No, you are not, you are actually not dumb. Like you basically got the idea very, very well.
Okay, cool.
Now, actually the thing is like the commercial, real, useful quantum computers, like IBM, Google, some of the companies, Rigetti, and then some like Europe, there are actually university in Canada, Waterloo, developing quantum computers. in China, in Germany, in France, like they all have like working quantum computer right now.
Wow.
So, and then the for since the most popular quantum computer is developed by IBM and Google, I'm going to go from their quantum computer to give examples. Okay.
Thank you.
Now, currently, like if you have an internet connection, you can actually connect to IBM's quantum computer right now for free and then use it.
Amin's life just changed.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
He's like, oh.
When he told me you can add another 64 bits and no QPUs, I'm like, this is a different world now.
So the thing is,
Different
like,
world now.
IBM's free quantum computers, which you can connect via an internet connection, are basically like 5, 7 qubits, like a little noisy, like things like that. If you want to access more quality, more premium version of the IBM quantum computers, you need to pay. And then those computers are like 64 bits. There is one architecture, 127 bits, qubits, sorry.
Qubits, which then to go back to what you were talking about, at some point it can be a Q di with a D, right? You said there was two different types of potential in the future,
Yes.
qubits and Q dits. What was the other
So,
version? I'm sorry.
yeah, qubit is the one that I have only 0 and 1 information.
Got it.
For qubits, I might have like more than two information.
Got it.
Now,
Okay. So that's not even the qubits are incredibly more powerful, but that's still not even as powerful as one qubit, potentially.
that's like we don't know that yet because qubit is still like an like a research topic right now. So
I see.
I'm not going to say more powerful or not. However, in the future, let's say we were able to create a qubit-based quantum computer, which is like real, no noise, like clear gates. Yes, it might be more,
Might be
it is going to
there.
be more powerful than the
And
qubit-based
then,
quantum computer.
do I want to go back to a very simple question here because there's a lot of speculation out there in the world, but I want to make it very clear to everyone, we do have quantum computers currently right now, like
Yes.
in existence.
Yes, you can actually I was given like for about 2 years, I am given a summer school. I'm basically organizing a summer school, which like takes one student from zero, no quantum computing experience, and then like in 10 days, I'm to trying to teach how do you program IBM's quantum computer. So that's the thing that's my goal actually. Like with some internet connection, you can basically go just go to IBM Q and then learn Qiskit on a Python package, and then you
Okay.
can actually use it right now.
Wow. Okay.
I have a
Thank you
question.
for that.
How practical are these existing quantum computers? Are they being used for work?
So that's the thing. That's the million-dollar question right now.
Yeah.
Actually, the reason that they are not useful right now is the reason I have a job right now.
Oh, okay.
So I am.
Ah, okay. You're like,
So
so we
usually,
don't
like,
want them useful. I want to keep my paycheck.
the
So
So your question, the answer to your question is yes and no. Yes, in the sense of like we are able to use quantum computers to simulate some preliminary physics or engineering problems. Like we can basically like lay the groundwork for algorithms that when the quantum computers are going to be more scalable in the future, we might basically use those algorithms and then actually do the useful algorithm. And then when we get there, like some of the problems are going to be much more easier compared to classical computer. For instance, like what are those problems? One is a simulation problem. Like simulation, if I want to, let's say, okay, I'm going to take a step back and then say we'll go from like a particle accelerator experiment example. So basically, we have a particle accelerator at Fermilab. What we are doing here, we are basically smashing particles, and then we are trying to find like quarks, basically top quark and bottom quark, were discovered on the site at Fermilab. However, like for not all particles that you can do for the experiment, you can all you also want to do simulation on a computer instead of that, instead of the particle accelerator. So you want to like simulate a quantum system on a classical computer, which is going to require a lot of resources. So you basically simulate a quantum system on a quantum computer, like directly. This idea actually goes back to like Richard Feynman's paper in 1981 or 1982. He said, he basically said the same thing, like we are trying to simulate a quantum system on a classical computer, which is not scalable. Let's do, let's use a quantum platform to simulate a quantum system, like which is more direct. So for simulation problems, yes, we are working on those problems right now. So we have like some lattice gauge theory problems where we model the quantum chromodynamics, which when I say this technical word, it basically means the subatomic particles quark, the dynamics of it. We can basically simulate these quarks on a quantum computer or a condensed matter system. Let's say we have a spin chain or two-dimensional spin, which if you are going to simulate a very large spin system on a classical computer, it might require a lot of resources where like not many people can do that also. You actually have to use some approximation methods if you want to do on classical computer, which are like Monte Carlo or Hartree-Fock. Like I'm saying technical words, but you don't need to remember them. So now you can, there are actually like a lot of papers in the last 10 years about doing these simulation algorithms. The other like useful thing for quantum computer is the optimization problems. Optimization problems, like let's say I want to solve a traveling salesman problem. And then if I have like many, many, if my salesman has to stop at many cities, like this problem is actually quite untractable. It is quite computationally complex. So quantum computer can help about that. And these are the answer to your question about yes. Now, the no. Currently, since quantum computers are quite noisy and fragile, we do not have actually like a quantum advantage point yet. So what do I mean by fragile? Okay, let's say I'm going to have a refrigerator magnet that you can stick on your refrigerator. And then like take this magnet, although my smartphone, it can still do the job, right? It is not going to affect the work of the classical computer. If I take the same refrigerator magnet, hold it on a quantum processing unit, I have to calibrate everything over again. They are that fragile. So they are not scalable. That's one of the things. They are quite fragile to external effects like this. And then the qubits, quantum bits, are very, very short-lived. Like I am talking about 1 millisecond or less than 1 millisecond. By the way, I am talking about when I'm giving you these parameters like 1 millisecond or things like this, I'm talking about superconducting, like circuit-based quantum computer. There are actually other types of platforms like Rydberg atom, neutral atom, which I can go into them if you want after this. But first I want to cover the basics of the quantum computer. So, and then in order to do an operation for a qubit, you need to apply some gates. And then those gates are still not quite like accurate. So actually like in the last 10 years or so, I will say that like the accuracy of those operations like went from 50%, 60% accuracy to like 99% accuracy right now. So IBM's quantum computer actually has like 96%, 99.99% accuracy that are listed over there. Okay. However, this is still not enough
Yeah,
because
it's not enough. We need the gate to be 100. That's
exactly.
100. There's 60%. That's not even real.
That's very bad. But like it was like done in like 2007 or 2008. Still, I mean, in order to show that we can do some kind of quantum operation, it is good.
Just to clarify to our audience, what we mean by gate is a logical operator. For example, true and true is always true. And when Doa says that 60% accuracy, that means there was a AND gate or AND operation that was saying true and true is false 40% of the time.
Exactly.
That's disastrous.
Yes. I mean, imagine that, like, in
That's
the.
disastrous.
Yes, because, like, imagine that in classical computer right now, like, we are talking over internet connection. And then the computer is doing, like, gazillions of processes right now. Imagine that all of the processes, all of the logical operations are 99.99% accurate. I will not be communicating with you right now.
Yeah,
So the
has to be 100.
yes, currently, like actually, I would also do an historical comparison over here. When the first computer, like I'm going to go with by the ENIAC computer in 1947. Like that computer, like first computer is like ENIAC, it was about room size, but it had the computational power of a less than my tabletop calculator. Okay. And then in 1950s, we were able to do some like integrated chips and then like shrink the size of the computer. In those years, the accuracy of the computer was still about like 70%, 80%.
Oh, wow.
Yes. When it become like when the hardware technology progressed, and then we were able to like do operations which are like real accurate, then in 80s it became a personal computer, and then it entered our homes. What I see in the quantum computer development, this timeline is going a little faster compared to classical computer. Because like if I take the first quantum operation, qubit operation in 1999 in MIT and IBM, the operation was like quite low, had quite low accuracy. However, it was still a quantum operation. Like it was basically the kind of state-of-art operation. Currently, like commercial quantum computers right now have like 95, more than 95% accuracy. So we are getting there, I think. Okay, I will give you one more example about this. Like, okay, when I talk about simulation, optimization, like basically these are the things that scientists or companies might be interested in. So, however, there is also one important aspect of quantum computers which affects everyday life. So, I told you that classical computers have a speed limit, right? So in order to increase the computational power of a classical computer, I have to have more, exponentially more resources for the classical computer. So this fact is actually used to do your encryption. So your like emails, your bank accounts, your Facebook account are all encrypted. Based on the fact that these classical computers have a speed limit. So, and then this encryption actually works like actually the encryption problem boils down to finding factors of prime factors of a number. So I have like I'm basically choosing a number, big, which is a big number, and then it is made of two factors of two prime numbers. And then if you can find the prime numbers, that means you can't be able to break
Encrypt.
The break the password by brute force. without hacking or something, of course, like without the backdoor methods.
Right.
Now, for classical computer, finding these prime factors is computationally very difficult, notoriously difficult. Let's say I give you a small number, 21. You want to find the prime factors of it. What you do for a classical computer is 1 times 1, 1, no. 1 times 2, 2, yeah. No. 2 times 3, no. So you go, you try all the possibilities. If the number is quite big, you see that like you need to try a lot of like a lot of combinations here. Okay. Finding the prime factors, as Peter Shor showed in 1995, is quite faster compared to classical computer. So this is one of the things that you might have a quantum advantage, for finding the prime factors, and then so that you can break the passwords, basically.
So what you're telling me is, which I think that's the realization just came to me now, the fact that encryption is safe relies on the speed limit that classical computing has.
Kind of, yeah.
When
yes.
there is no speed limit, then that encryption is not safe.
That's correct.
So then that's again changed the world right now for me. The second time this podcast. But
yeah,
I had a theoretical question. Now we talked about practice. So about theories, I'm assuming the fact that, as you said, you have a job is that 100% accuracy, gate accuracy is theoretically possible.
Yep.
Okay, but also what are the, and I understand that you're saying the computers are not ready to compete with classical computing because of the practical issues. So what are the theoretical advantages? For example, I'm trying to, and please tell me if this comparison is wrong. I'm trying to compare a single core of a CPU that is made with silicon and gold with the QPU, QPU that works with one qubit. Which one is like I'm thinking of frequency or flops, like how many, like 3 gigahertz CPU, are they faster in doing, because what I'm trying to get at is all of the advantages, theoretical advantages I've heard from you is about parallelism. What about tasks that are not parallelizable? Then does quantum still give us advantage in computing those?
Nice question. So first, I'm going to go with the time scale question. So basically, you are bound by when you are doing a computation on a quantum computer, you are bound by the coherence time of the qubit, and then this like coherence time is basically means in like high level summary, how long does the qubit is going to keep its quantum properties. So this time, coherence time, currently we have is about 1 millisecond.
Okay.
So that means if I prepare a qubit after 1 millisecond, it becomes a classical basically information.
Oh, okay.
And then it decays. Okay. So this is basically like this decaying actually has some connection with the nuclear decay, actual nuclear decay. It is basically a kind of similar thing. Okay.
Oh.
Because like when I excite the system for a qubit, it becomes unstable. It does not want to be there because this highly energetic system.
Okay.
And then it wants to go to the lower energy. And then after some like half time, decay time, it goes to the lower energy. So for like nuclear for nuclear materials, which can emit nuclear radiation, this time is quite long. However, for qubits, it is like much shorter than millisecond. So, and then one gate operation. So if you have a coherence time of 1 millisecond, you want to have like your operations in the order of nanoseconds or in the fraction of a microsecond, which we actually do right now, okay? So basically like most of the operations that you do on a quantum computer are in the order of nanoseconds. Some of the operations are a little longer. For instance, like controlled NOT gate is kind of more difficult to do that on a hardware, and then it takes longer time to implement. However, like that CNOT, controlled NOT gate, is one of the like crucial ingredients if you want to do a quantum algorithm. So that means like basically coherence time over the gate time is going to tell you how many gates, how many operations that you can do on a quantum computer, which is actually kind of low around these days. However, it is also increasing fast.
Okay.
Now, for your other question, parallelism, actually it is kind of like more theoretical question. I will say that like I have seen some papers in the from the like from Preskill, was one of the authors, Sean Preskill from Caltech. So it was actually saying that like there are some problems in classical computing that quantum computing might not give you quantum advantage. So like actually these kind of papers that come and go most of the time, and then there might be speculation, and then you don't read, like actually you don't read all the theory papers. However, when someone like Preskill writes this paper and then makes this claim, you stop and then really read the paper. So it is really like so like yeah, like for not all the problems that you might have quantum advantage. For instance, like you for some of the problems that you might do, you might not do parallelism, you are right, you might not get a quantum advantage.
Okay. But is there a theoretical limit for the number of calculations that the QPU can do on one qubit?
Yes. So there is actually a like probably I should tell you so something about quantum speed limit.
Oh, okay.
Which tells you like it is actually a theory, Leib-Robinson theory, which I'm just telling you again technical word, but you might forget it. It actually tells you like how the how fast information can propagate from one place to another.
Okay.
And then there's actually a limit about that.
Okay.
And then you cannot go faster than this quantum speed limit, Leib-Robinson limit.
But is that the same as the one in the classical computers where we have like, for example, signal needs to travel through wire, right?
Yes.
Propagation delay in a normal CPU. Is that the same delay?
I will not the same because they depend on different principles. Like if I'm talking about the speed limit in a wire, it is basically a resistance.
Yeah.
However, like for quantum speed limit, it is actually a theoretical limit.
Oh, okay.
So like eventually
it's going to be faster.
Eventually, like the information can be a little slower than this speed limit, because like
so the limiting factor is the decay of qubit, you're saying.
That's lifetime.
Okay.
Also, you are bound by this quantum speed limit to propagate information.
Okay.
And then, like I should also mention that, like. In order to achieve quantum computing, like as a hardware, you have to cool them, like to millikelvin temperatures.
Okay.
However, like even like 100 millikelvin, 10 millikelvin, temperatures are still kind of hot for quantum computers, which might actually give you cause a lot of like noise.
Yeah.
And then that's going to cause like more noisy information propagation. And then this information is going to be slower than this speed limit.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah, did you hear the silence kind of come across? Do it.
By the way, let me know if I'm going too technical about this. Like there are a lot of like nice questions coming from Amin. So I want to discuss more. However,
no,
like,
you're doing great.
Okay. I just want to note, speaking of the parallelism, so potential advantage of classical computer computing over quantum could be strictly sequential problems, as you said with that famous paper. There's a notable fact here. Many of the most important, biggest computation problems that you're solving are parallelizable, such as encryption, traveling salesmen, simulation. Most simulation setups are parallelizable. And now, notably, and I think this is an accident, AI relies on deep learning, which happens to be matrix multiplication, which matrix multiplication is entirely parallelizable, completely independent calculations. So, the fact that deep learning caught on, I always say it was an accident. It could be something else, but now it's parallelizable. It's entirely parallelizable. So that's why I think quantum computing is going to, of course, have an impact that is really, really huge. And the one that I didn't see coming was encryption. Now I am distressed.
First about the machine learning part, my minor in computer science is consists of machine learning, and I am actually working on quantum machine learning projects right now. As someone who is working on this, I can say we do not know if we are going to have an advantage on quantum machine learning.
Really? Even though
Like,
it's highly parallelizable.
yes, I am not sure. I'm like, basically in science in general, I avoid trying to make like very big statements without like without being sure. Like I try to avoid speculation. So that's one of the things that I am kind of skeptical about, like if you are going to have an advantage for the machine learning projects. Like I always say that machine learning is always like statistics on steroids or regression on steroids, basically. Like these techniques were mostly known since 1960s. We are basically seeing a very like fascinating machine learning explosion right now, artificial intelligence explosion, due to thanks to the fact that we have more powerful computers that can do those like 1960s techniques right now. So yeah, like I.
I think I'm hoping you agree with this with me. I think deep learning is a lazy solution.
I agree with you most of the time.
It's a lazy solution. It's saying we have expendable computation power. Let's just throw it at it and
I.
see where it gets to. And without like, and after the result comes out, sometimes it works, and we were like, yeah, it works. And there's a different model that comes out, works equally. But they are completely different. They work the same. They behave the same. They seem to behave the same. They
No, Amin's
utilize
tenure track. I mean, he's not
the
tenured yet, so all of a sudden he's gonna have some questions to answer when he's up for. What do you think of machine learning?
In this podcast, if they get me
It is
ranting
perfect.
about
Machine learning is great. Please, like, do not firm enough people. Please do not listen to this.
I agree with you 100% that this is 1960s technology that we are throwing the newly found computation power at it. Because in the so if you look at the classification problem, it was formulated in the 30s,
Yeah, exactly.
Bayesian method that had nothing to do with deep learning and was theoretically proven to be the most accurate, the Bayes optimal classifier. But no
Absolutely.
one's trying to estimate that.
Yep, exactly.
Everyone's like, this is deep learning. That's why I think
Because
it's
they basically like left that part out. They really actually left that testing part out because computers were not that powerful at the time. They basically did not know how to test it. Like, there is actually like another thing that, like, for instance, chaos theory, nonlinear systems, these like equations, nonlinear equations, were known like since 19th century. However, like after the like popularity of the computers, we were able to really study the nonlinear dynamics. Like it is kind of like that.
Yeah, it is. But what bothers me is with newly found computational power, we have two paths. We have the neural networks path, which
Yep.
is stochastic and nothing is guaranteed. And then we have the Bayes optimal classifier path, which is a guaranteed path to optimality. We are not throwing this computational power to estimate the Bayes optimal classifier. We are throwing it at
Yes,
neural network.
I absolutely agree with you. Like, I know, like, the Bayesian optimization might be more suitable for some of the classification problems, and then I actually do not know, like, why it Bayesian or like expectation maximization methods, like
Yes.
things like that, are not more used about this classification.
So
this is like this kind of goes like if you a guy sees a nail and then like it has a hammer, everything seems like a nail.
Yes. If we get a hammer, everything looks like a nail. Yes.
Yeah.
But let me just brag a little. I wrote a paper in 2021, a conference paper called Precise Bayes Classifier. It's an estimation of the optimal Bayes classifier. And now I'm about to send precise Bayes regression as an algorithm. And I try to directly estimate the conditional probabilities by just counting, simple counting. But it gets complicated because there are exponential number of the possibilities.
Oh,
so I have a memory problem.
I would like to see that, but please send me.
I will send you the conference paper and I will share the journal paper I'm writing.
Yeah, like
just before classes start.
Like, I think the machine learning problems, like, I agree that, like, we are basically throwing some garbage to machine learning, and then we are hoping that this machine learning algorithms are going to give us like nice result. But what I'm still not comfortable about machine learning methods, one of the things that I'm not comfortable is we don't know actually why that works. What I mean by is like, for instance, as a physicist, my job is not to compute everything without a brain. I need to understand what's going on, right?
Yeah.
In order to like understand these why machine learning methods work, like we need to find answers to more deeper questions, like why is there a probability? Like what is actually probability? If I optimize a probability distribution function, why does it give me optimal solution? I mean, things like that.
Yeah.
Like, and then these problems are quite really deep problem, actually. Like, those
Noah,
are good problems.
You just completely blew my mind with like the simple question of like, why is probability?
Yeah.
Like, what
sorry,
is
sorry.
That? It was brilliant. No, it was brilliant, but like, it comes into like philosophy and like human existence very quickly too.
Yeah.
And that's what I absolutely love about you specifically within like theoretical physics, is we start getting into some of these most beautiful questions that like are entirely human. And so many people don't get there because we have all of these scientific barriers, whether it's algebra or, you know, calculus, and like everyone gets bogged down by that stuff. And then when you get past it, you start getting into more of the art of being human and having that. And so I'm like, I didn't mean that in a negative way. I just meant that was absolutely beautiful. And thank you for saying that. Go ahead, Amin.
That slip of a tongue occurred. Like, first I said why, and then I changed that to what. Like, what exactly is probability? Is because like I was thinking, like let's say you throw a dice, the probability of like one is going to come up, is going to be one over six, right? Yeah. That's what we learned from high school.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, this is actually an axiom. Like, this doesn't have a proof. Like.
No.
We just agree, like it
is
one over
six. And that's how what statistics is based on. And,
yes, and
the Bayesian side says, well, there are things that affect it. And we agree.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
things like
agree.
That. These are axioms. Like that's what I meant by like we need to understand probability and statistics
but
a little bit better.
We are in a position, which in my opinion is very annoying, that people say, look, the machine learned. And we say, that's not enough. We need to learn too. And they say, shut up, it works. That's what we're hearing.
Right, that's exactly where I'm at. I'm like, well, it does it, so we're done, right? Like all problems solved. And then it also becomes more of a problem when you're looking for funding or when you're working for grant and trying to get buy-in and investment, right? Because like people that are like, oh, we've done it, congratulations. Like it's similar to like, well, we went to the moon, we're done there. There's nothing else to do. And you're like, well, hold on, some of these things can be better and improved on to continue this learning as society.
Well, there was a meme that I was seeing, like abstract. That there are three guys. One is like quite buff, muscle guy, and then this is the abstract. And then actual paper is like a guy with belly, beer belly. Like these are the things like that, actually. But when you're writing a grant, like you basically use all of these things, and then your grant is like a buff guy. But actual content of the grant is like that beer belly guy.
So true, so
That
true.
all.
I want to be cognizant of our time and all of the incredible things that you're doing, and really I
Thank
just don't want to continue to delay human progress because we're talking on a
you.
podcast. But I do think the way you brought up a beer belly is a perfect way to kind of end this conversation. And as we've been talking about quantum and the multiple different states of being at the same moment, I feel like it's important to share how you and I met, because it goes into more of the beauty of being on this planet and the probability and the unknown factors of
Yes,
everything.
exactly.
Right, exactly. So, Doa, I was hosting an event with NIU STEAM at the Two Brothers Roundhouse in Aurora, and we had an incredibly brilliant scientist from Argonne doing a presentation and talking about all different things within AI and machine learning. And I'm standing in the back listening, trying to follow along like I did with this conversation. And Doa walks up and he's like, "What's going on here? What's here?" And I'm like, "Oh, we're doing a conversation about machine learning," which again, it's Two Brothers Roundhouse, which is just a massive bar, absolutely beautiful place. If you're in the area, go check it out.
Yes,
They will take care of you. But
absolutely.
like most of the time when people are randomly walking up, I'm like, okay, like I'm sorry, I'm gonna be nice, but like you're probably gonna be annoyed by my answer and you're gonna just walk away from me. And Doa continues to look at me and he's like, "So I'm a theoretical physicist at Fermilab working in quantum computing. I would like to like talk to you about this." And then Doa, I'm gonna leave the punchline to yourself. Why were you there that night?
Because I was supposed to meet with two of my friends at Two Brothers Brewery. They told me Two Brothers Brewery without mentioning the place. And then I learned that they were actually Two Brothers Warrenville, and I was at Two Brothers Aurora. And I was looking at, since that's a big brewery, I was basically looking everywhere. I saw, and then I basically end up in this Argonne. The lady from Argonne National Laboratory, and then since they had the like punchlines, but buzzwords that took my attention, machine learning, quantum plus, like, and then I was watching them like a rabbit, like hypnotized, and then Russ, probably I Russ approached me because. I don't know, maybe I look like a creep.
Not at all. You looked interested. You looked like, oh, hey, this is a thing. Which also, though, you didn't know this, there was trivia going on that night. So my actual job that night was just to point out where trivia was later on. So like I looked at you, I'm like, he doesn't look like he's looking for trivia. He looks like he's looking for the answers to the universe. And so I approached you.
We should meet up at the Two Brothers Roundhouse. I,
Yeah, be sure. Be sure.
yeah, this has a great history. It's where BNSF Redwood started. Don't get me started on that.
Absolutely.
It's
Well, gentlemen, I think this was the first thing because those STEM cafes, like they take a lot of planning, and we're actually in the process of planning the spring semester for that stuff. So I think there is an absolutely great opportunity to have to circle back around to Two Brothers Roundhouse and have Doa and Amin, you both be the presenters in there, because a lot of times we bring two of them. And I think this conversation of, AI machine learning within a business and kind of more traditional, like what we're doing today with then, you know, your quantum computing, and then just let you two go
quantum
talk.
Machine.
Yeah, go ahead.
I go first because I don't want to follow him.
Deal.
That's fine. I mean,
deal. Deal. No, I was like, yeah, that only makes sense. I absolutely love it. So for all of our listeners, be looking out for the future for the spring semester. We'll probably have them come out and actually do this, or maybe even to, because I think this is a really cool one, maybe if you'd be interested, they'll come out to DeKalb, where we can, because again, traveling, we always get a good crowd, but if we bring it closer, we can maybe branch this out and have it to be a little bit more impactful, because I think our community would love to continue this conversation. But again, I'm thankful for all of your wisdom, all of your knowledge, for sharing
thank
this
you.
Stuff, and this will be a continuing conversation. So again, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for listening to another episode of The Gateway, brought to you by Northern Illinois University, where your future is our focus. And please remember to love always the promise of tomorrow today.